Welcome to Value Through Vulnerability. This is a podcast dedicated to putting the human back into humanity, and I'm your host, Gary Turner. I'm also the founder of Hexo Change, and Hexo Change is a transformational change practice dedicated to helping you connect to yourself, to others, and to systems at large in a more meaningful way, thus helping us turn around our workplace and planetary challenges and accelerating how alive we all feel in every aspect of our lives. This track is called Kaleidoscope and was created for me personally and for Hexo Change by Peter Griffiths, one half of the amazing Mind Takeaway. I hope you enjoy this exploration and please do share it on your social platforms so we can bring more humanity to more people. Hope to speak to you soon. Welcome to Value Through Vulnerability. This is a podcast dedicated to putting the human back into humanity. And I've got a very awesome human to join us today, and you, the listener, in Laura Storm, who is founder of Regenerators. And she's also co-author of a great book that's now out called Regenerative Leadership, The DNA of Life-Affirming 21st Century Organizations. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Thank you so much. I've been really looking forward to this.
Oh, well, look, would you mind giving a little bit more of an expanded introduction as to, you know, who is Laura and where has your passion come from around this regenerative leadership space?
Yes, I shall try and be very brief. So I have always known since I was a kid that I wanted to work in the space of saving the environment, I guess you could call it. So as a kid, I started up saving money and doing campaign stuff. I think I started as an 8-9 year old to buy up pieces of the Amazon, thought that that I would be a kind of typical environmentalist. As soon as I had finished high school, I went to the Ecuadorian part of the Amazon and worked through the same organization through which I had bought up the pieces of the rainforest. And thought that I would spend some time there. I ended up spending a few months there, working with all sorts of things, all kinds of things. But quite quickly, I got impatient, not because they're not doing great work, because they are, but I wanted, I just developed a desire within me to change things at a more systemic level, higher up, I guess you could say, that on the ground, although both is immensely important. I felt called to kind of understanding the machine of business from the inside. So I went back, studied business in Copenhagen and London, and then slowly I started to initiate and create different global organizations working in the space of sustainability and climate change. So I've headed and helped start a coalition called the Copenhagen Climate Council that was working on global climate change policy, where we had people like Richard Branson involved. I later then started an organization called Sustainia, and that worked on making sustainability exciting and fun by providing people a tangible vision of how a sustainable future could look like and offer them concrete solutions. So it became more kind of tangible instead of before we had communicated a lot using doom and gloom stay scenarios, making people as scared about the future and having it be very pointed fingers. If you're not doing this, the world will go under. Whereas Sustainia offered a more optimistic voice in the sense of let's co-create on making a sustainable and thriving future where we all can live healthier, happier lives. And then while I was doing nothing but work back in 2015, I was heading Sustainia that had grown to become quite a big organization. And I was the typical passionate leader who worked nonstop. I also became a mom in 2013, and of course also spent a lot of time being a mother, but I definitely also spent way too much time on work. So suddenly I had a major accident, and I had a minor traumatic brain injury in the summer of 2015. And that just kind of started a long and slow process towards something completely different. And the long story short is that for 2 years, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do anything but be, more or less, especially not the first year. I was not able to have a conversation, to listen to radio, to read, to write, to think much, to be honest. So I escaped into nature and spent a lot of time alone in silence and in nature. And through that process and through that journey that we could talk about for hours, not because I'm particularly interesting, but because it's interesting the breakdown that happens within a human once they lose all their abilities and capabilities. And no one was able to tell me whether I would ever recover. It's interesting in and of itself what happens to the mental psyche once you go through such a process. And obviously it had its very, very, very dark moments, very traumatic moments. But once I started to let go and surrender to healing, instead of trying to falsely believe that I could project management a recovery of a brain injury, once I surrendered to healing completely, I slowly started to see progress happen. Not from one day to the next, but slowly I started we could see progress happening. And that whole experience of surrendering to silence and surrendering to something completely different than what had been my default mode my entire life was just very, very mind-blowing and eye-opening. And in terms of my work, what it made me incredibly fascinated with was understanding the nature with which I was surrounded by most of my time. And I could not believe that someone like me that had worked in the space of sustainability my entire life did not know more about nature than I did. So understanding nature's systems, understanding how nature works, how nature collaborates, what nature does to me and my biology and my nervous system and everything just became a great interest point for me. And as soon as I was able to read again and listen to podcasts and listen to audiobooks, that's what I kind of immersed myself in for a few years. While also on the side recovering. And it was just one of those experiences where every day I had these big insights as to, wow, I can't believe why we have not applied this to leadership or to sustainability. And I started to kind of see this vision of how nature-inspired leadership and nature-inspired organizations and nature-inspired life could look like, and how this provided and offered a holistic framework and a holistic vision of what we need to see change in our society as a whole. We see a massive collapse when we look around, breakdown after breakdown of financial systems, human systems, psychological systems, social systems. There's a lot of breakdown going on in our world right now. You and I are talking in the midst of the Australian fires. There's a lot of things that are breaking down, and we are seeing more and more, if we dare look, how independent we are of nature and how what really we are just nature. We are part of nature. But what we have done for so long is to separate ourselves from nature, and we have created sort of like a false or a society that is more like an illusion of something that we can control, that is a machine that we can kind of fine tune. And that is an illusion, and that is something that that I have come to see very, very clearly. So that was a very long answer, but basically regenerative leadership and the kind of idea of regenerative development of our societies is that notion that we need to draw on the intelligence of life itself, the intelligence of nature. And we need to dare look at leadership as something that is just, that is holistic, that has not gotten to do with implementing another set of rules or a new matrix or new KPI system. It's a holistic approach that start with leaders understanding that they need to generate more value than they take, and they need to see themselves as part of a bigger ecosystem where everything that they initiate and everything they put into the organization has an output. And is that something that is bringing life and vitality into the ecosystems that this entity influence? Or is it bringing forth degeneration and destruction, to use very harsh but true words? So that's a mindset that me and my colleagues are trying to help facilitate, that we as leaders need to dare see ourselves as ecosystem facilitators that look more broadly than just in our Excel sheets, and that we dare look at the organization as an entity, an organism that is alive.
Wow. Laura, thank you so much, first of all, for being vulnerable and sharing your story. And I think there's so much that I'd love to explore with you. I think the first thing I'd like to go to, if I may, is you spoke about how many more insights and realizations you had, almost because you were forced by your body to slow down. Would you think you would have seen half of what you saw had you have continued at the pace you had before your body shut down?
That's of course something that I have talked to myself and my partner and others a lot about. And in many ways, I'm incredibly thankful for what happened, because it was very brutal and it was very harsh and it was traumatic in many ways. But the way that it happened, and because I was not healing very quickly, it offered the duration that, in my case, I really needed to really and truly get the point. Because what we see is many people have maybe shorter breakdowns and they realize something has to change. But then they recover, or then they are back in their fast-paced life. And because our defaults and our programming are so deeply integrated in us, it's very hard to change unless it becomes a conscious effort over time. And in my case, I was forced to have it be a conscious effort over time, because I was healing. I mean, the brain just takes a while to regenerate if it's hurt in such a bad way than mine was. So it took constant kind of dedication to a new way of living life that had to integrate silence and meditation and exercise, getting out in nature. I had to be very strict with how, as soon as I was able to work again, it was a blessing in disguise that I was not able to fill my day with an 8 or 9 hour work day with meetings and la la la. No, I had to be very strict in how I prioritized my day, so that I throughout my day had those breaks that I could be in silence, that I could refuel my body also in terms of nutrition. So that was a blessing in disguise. And I've talked to myself a lot about what would have happened had this not happened. And I'm pretty sure that instead I would have had a major stress breakdown, maybe a few years later, because the way that I was living was not in any way sustainable. And it was like I was so focused on my mission in life that I had put myself out of the equation. And I'll share a funny story with you, because once, when I was living in the Amazon, one of the things we did was to go with big, what are they called in English? The machete knives, the big long-tailed knives. And we would go out in the forest for many, many hours. Very, very hard work to make sure that our land was not intruded, and make sure that we would destroy snipers' huts if they were illegally in our territory, stuff like that. So we were in a hot kind of moist heat, walking for 8 to 10 hours a day. And at that time, I developed a mantra for myself that I was very proud of, and that I had just applied on up until the accident, that every time the going got tough, I would repeat to myself, "You are a machine, you are a machine, you are a machine." I would just think of myself like a machine, that I was not allowed to feel tired. I was not allowed to feel anything. I just had to keep on going, because the work that I did was so immensely important. And I think to some degree that goes for a lot of people, that they feel what they are doing is so important It may not be, but that's what they keep telling themselves. Or it also goes for a lot of people that they have designed their lives so much around getting that big salary that they can't kind of envision a life without that big salary. So they become sort of like a prisoner of their own life design, because they just have to, they have to bring in that monthly salary. And I think that whole notion of making yourself a machine and not daring to listen to what your body tells you, what your intuition tells you, goes for a lot of people when you look around today. And that definitely was true to me. And I think we've just come to a breaking point of that way of operating in the world. It's no longer something we can keep up. So what we also talk about in the book, and what I talk about when I'm out presenting to corporate leaders, is that we have never been more stressed or depressed or anxious than we are today. And that's not me making that up. That is what all the kind of, you know, big stress reports are saying. The latest from Gallup was interviewing 154,000 adults from 122 countries, I believe it was. And the stats from that was just mind-blowing, very depressing. So we are kind of breaking down, and the systems around us, the ecosystems on which we depend, is breaking down. And I think part of what I believe is true is that no animal on this planet could truly happy or truly thrive when they are messing up their own nest to the degree that we are. We may not realize that. We may not see ourselves as nature lovers or whatever you want to call that. But we are all an animal living on a planet, floating around in the universe. And our natural habitat, we have distanced and separated ourselves from. And no animal can thrive without a deep and strong connection to their natural habitat. No chimpanzee can feel alive or happy when you shut them into a concrete building with artificial daylight for most of their days, only to transport themselves in their car or on a bus to go home, get some sleep before they repeat the next day. But that's what most of us human beings, that's most of how we have designed our lives. And it's utter insanity when you start looking at it like that.
I
lost my train of thought there.
it's a wonderful train of thought, and I want you to keep sharing it with us, because I think what we're hoping this conversation breeds is reflective space. Mm. To think, actually, do I want to continue being that monkey trapped inside a building 24/7? Or can we collectively become more conscious? This is the choices we make. So I'll be very open, Laura. Like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, the conversation we're now having was not anywhere on my peripheral vision.
Mm.
That's not because I'm special, you're special, or anybody else. It's just my consciousness level, my awareness just wasn't there. I knew about sustainability. I put the right cans in the right box. But the bigger system part, I think, is what's quite scary. Mm. And I'd like to maybe have you talk a little bit about how are some of the ways, or what do we need to do as humans to step into the conversation more fully around this bigger system shift that we need to have? You know, what do we need to be? Do we need to be more vulnerable? Do we need to be more courageous? Do we need to listen more? You know, what are some of the ways that we can right away step into this conversation, do you feel?
We can make it very complex, and we can make it very simple. And let's start by making it very simple. And then, of course, there are more nuances to it once you start embarking on that journey. But I think first and foremost, it's about a reconnection to ourselves. That's something that I did not have 5 years ago. I was so in my head. I was so focused on the next targets. I was so focused on the next keynote to give, or the next holiday to go on with my family. And my partner has actually made fun of me because often in the weekends, because I was quite kind of, I wasn't a workaholic. I wasn't working in on the weekends. I prioritized spending time with my daughter and my partner and doing other kinds of things besides work. But it was just full on every platform that I engaged with. So even the weekends, I started to project manage like a CEO, which was just very, very tiring. And I think had I not had this accident, I think we would have ended up getting a divorce because I was just a bit of a mouthful, to be honest. And I think that goes for a lot of people, that we become so kind of, we start going at a speed in our everyday life that it's very, very hard to shift tracks in our weekends and in the evenings. That to some extent, our minds are still racing with full speed. And we want to keep ourselves busy because our body is so used to that kind of, to that gear. And that's not me making that up. That's like neurobiologically. If we don't practice slowing down and operating by another speed, we will continue going at the speed that we have falsely trained our body to be in nonstop. Basically, it's what is called the high beta mode, which is a mode that were developed over thousands and thousands of years going back through our evolution, because it was important that we as human beings to survive, that we had a gear where we faced with a predator, or if someone was trying to kill us, we needed that gear where our minds could work full speed and think of solutions nonstop and have tunnel vision and only focus on what was ahead of us. But the problem is that now most of us are living in high beta, and that is incredibly energy consuming for our bodies. And that is what is making us sick, not only or not just with stress or breakdown, but all sorts of illnesses comes because our body and our organism is using so much energy on that drive, the high beta mode, that other parts of us start shutting down. So the simple answer was there to start reconnecting more with yourself and creating those spaces where you start to sense how am I actually feeling? What is going on in my emotional inner landscape these days? Where these bodily sensations that I have are often stored emotions, what has triggered them? Start to kind of exploring with curiosity your inner emotional landscape. It's not simple to do, but it's the first and most important priority for a lot of us, because when we start doing that on a more regular basis, there's a whole new world that slowly starts to unfold, and that happens for everyone if they put in the time. And what I mean by that is not you have to learn to meditate in order to start seeing this new world. No, it can just be living life at a slower space, where if you go for a walk in the park for 30 minutes, instead of racing up in your mind with whatever is going on at work or how you want to organize the weekend, practice that that awareness of being here. How is my body feeling towards the road that I'm walking on? What kind of smells do I smell? What kind of noise or sounds is around me? Start kind of retuning your physical body into being this full spectrum sensual being in a way. And from that comes slowly another level of consciousness and awareness that many of us has lost completely touch with.
That's so helpful, Laura. Thank you for that. I'm thinking to myself now, I've got a lovely beach just down here where I go for a walk sometimes. But if I'm honest, I go for that walk listening to a podcast rather than necessarily taking in the smells and the sounds. So I'm still shutting myself off somehow, even if I've got this beautiful beach that I'm walking along. So I find that a really helpful reflection, just to really give yourself to the environment for a period of time.
And that's why I say it's not simple, and I have to be aware of that myself, because now I have regained my health completely, which I'm of course immensely thankful for. But then I need to make sure that I don't go back into the same default, and it does take constant kind of awareness. Also, something that many of us are guilty of. Just kind of immediately when we have a moment when we're waiting for someone or something, we take up our phones. And after we introduce smartphones and tablets to our society, brain injuries have increased by 25 or 30%, which is quite saying in and of itself, which to me says a lot about, well, our brains never get that shut off time, because we're constantly bombarding it with so many kind of input that it doesn't get that time to regenerate. Mm-hmm. And that for me is key, that we, in everything that we do, that we allow those moments for everything to regenerate, to shut off and start again.
It's so lovely. Honestly, I really want to have you for the next 2 hours, Laura, but I know I don't. So I'd like to move you forward. I'd like to just touch on, because I think it'd be really helpful for our listeners. There's five leadership principles that you speak about within your book. And you also spoke about this within your TEDx talk that you did. You spoke already about life-giving. I'd really like you, if you wouldn't mind, speaking a little bit more about this life-affirming leadership. You know, what does that look like? And how can people start to become more mindful of what this regenerative leadership looks like from a life-affirming point of view?
So nature's in and of itself life-affirming, which means life creates conditions conducive to life. And that is an ability that has been developed over millions of years of life on this planet. Life has 3.8 billion years of experience in creating conditions conducive to life. And every time, because nature is creative and have tested and tried out a lot of different life forms, many have not succeeded. And those that have not succeeded are those life forms that did not create conditions conducive for life and conditions conducive for their species to continue their life. So it's basically, how can we ensure that from an organizational point of view, that our organization is constantly, in everything that we do, creating the conditions that means that this organization can also thrive 5-10 years from now. So we are not messing up the ecosystems on which our livelihood and access to raw materials depend on. We are not messing up the human systems and the organizational design by treating our employees poorly. No, regenerative leaders are constantly having this, are constantly tuning in with the organism of the system and sensing where are there areas that feels alive and are producing and being creative and being innovative, and where are there situations where we as an entity are creating conditions conducive to degeneration or destruction. So where are we getting our raw materials from? Where are we getting how are our suppliers treating their own employees? Having that awareness that they are constantly, with their money and with their products, are constantly creating the reality and the life and the world that we live in. So are an organization's products contributing with more life, with more health and vitality for our species and for life on Earth to continue? Or are they actually contributing a route of degeneration and in the end extinction? Because we are in the midst of a sixth mass extinction. It's not something we talk a lot about, but it's crazy to think about that we are destroying up until 1,200 species a day because of human actions. It's not something that is front and center on the news, but that's the reality of things. The reality of things is that we soon have more plastic in our oceans than marine life. The reality of things is that we have depleted our soil so much by the way that we farm, that it's depleted from critical nutrients that we need to survive. I could go on and on, and I will not in this interview, but it's the reality of things that the way business is designed is in most cases for destruction. So how can we turn towards the intelligence of nature and see, hey, how can we employ the principles of life, the logic of life, to our organizations, and through that become more successful, also financially? And that is what Giles Hutchins and I have done in our book. We have provided a new framework that hopefully resonates with executives and business leaders, because it also speaks a business language. And both Giles and I have a business background, so we understand that world as well. And we understand that there are some things that are important in terms of creating the right support from shareholders and owners and whatnot. But we actually believe that the logic of life applied to leadership and applied to business sense is the only way forward. It also talks about how nature thrives through diversity and inclusion, how nature thrives through relationships, and that whole false belief that we have all been sort of like trained with, and it's inured in every business language, that it's survival of the fittest that we have falsely borrowed from Darwin, which is actually a wrong interpretation of what he said. He never said survival of the fittest as in strongest, most alpha. No, he meant survival of the species best able to fit in, to create the right kind of relationships, make yourself as relevant and important to as many species as possible. Treat your surroundings in a way that the surroundings want to have you stick along or stick around. So there's been many ways where the scientific revolution, the technology revolution, the industrial revolution has created a narrative that the business world has borrowed in a way that is not conducive to life, that views things in mechanistic silos, that views things as, in order to survive, you need to be harsh and rigid and beat the competition. And that sort of language that you need to destroy in order to succeed is just something that I'm very, very keen on helping business leaders realize that's just an insane illusion. Because when you destroy, you also destroy yourself, quite literally. Because the challenge that we are in the midst of is an existential crisis.
You've touched on something, Laura, that's so, so important to me personally. So I'm in a sales role. I work in an international business. And I, for probably the last 6 months now, that point about competition, I've been thinking a lot about that. And increasingly, as I've understood about, you know, your work and the work of our mutual friend, give her a shout out, Jenny Anderson, who kindly connected us. Is part of the problem the competition paradigm, that we believe that we need to be separate in order to win, rather than be part of this one system that we are all part of? So it should be collaboration over competition, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, as I've said a few times now, we are all so trained believing that we live in a world of scarcity, and that in order to get, others have to fall behind. You need to get ahead of the competition. It's everything. It's from the small things to how my 6-year-old daughter is measured in her kindergarten towards her peers in a very rigid, one-dimensional way. You have to fit into this matrix of how you are a successful 6-year-old, right? And she's doing quite well academically. But I think it's such a shame that even some of her friends that may be the next, I don't know, Mozart or have creative genius inside of them are told from the age of 5 or 6 that they are behind. And what does that do to a human being that already from that age you get presented with life as a big competition and you need to win the race? If not, you fall behind and all sorts of bad things will happen to you. We have not created a life where we are celebrating our differences. And when we have not created a life where we have succeeded telling ourselves that we are, or our kids that we are one, and in order for us to succeed, others need to succeed as well. It's incredibly complex. And I think what I mean is complex is how do we change that mindset, because it's so inward with us, in us. And do we just wait and sit around for the next generation to take over? No, that's not enough, because our education system is also rather, I was just about to use a very bad word, but it's effed up in many ways. How we are measured as human beings in the educational system for so long is hurting so many people. So many people are being told for so many years that they are wrong human beings and their talents are not celebrated. So that's something that I feel strongly about as well, because we can't just sit around and wait for the next generation to take over. No, we need to change the systems radically now, and we need to have these conversations that you and I are having. We need to host conferences that are talking about whole human beings, and I personally need to dare talk about what I mean with regenerative leadership in the field of sustainability that is also incredibly mechanistic and only focused on implementing the right kind of technology, the right kind of political frameworks. The sustainable development goals is taking up a lot of airtime, which is great, and the agenda is moving ahead, but still it's very silo focused. It's communicated in a matrix. The goals are not communicating, and there's nothing in there that speaks to a new level of consciousness, a different level of consciousness that makes us step one step back and look at ourselves as a collective that needs to collaborate in different ways. But it's challenging because we are all constantly triggered, and so am I, because how can I give an example? For all kinds of programs that I am creating with colleagues, the issue of ownership then comes up. So who owns? I mean, technically, we operate in the world of today where all kind of projects have to be legally anchored in some kind of entity. So who owns this? And do we want to go all the way that we all own this program? But then again, at the end of the day, we also need to make sure that we can feed our babies and that we have roof over our heads. So this kind of fear trigger is within all of us. Also, those of us that have dedicated our life's work to this, because we all have this. It's so deeply ingrained in us. And I don't have all the answers as to how we can avoid that, because we just live in a world where 1% owns most, and we need to survive, and it's triggering our survive kind of gene.
It's so interesting. One of the, and again, without trying to be too political, because I don't know enough about it, but something that seems to speak quite powerfully as part of the solution, Laura, for me, is this basic income, which people are talking about, which is actually how do we move to a system where everybody gets those base hierarchy of needs covered, you know, food and shelter, and then from there you can exceed and you can grow and you can win collectively, but everybody's okay, rather than this huge disparity. So I'm hopeful that some of these interventions will gain.
Me too.
Because I think it's right to be direct, as you are being and we are being in this conversation. but I also hope people get curious about what some of the solutions may be. So do you have any other ideas in terms of bringing us back to ourselves and back together collectively? Are there any other recommendations or ideas, as well as reading your book, Regenerative Leadership, where people should go, or if they're curious to learn more about this?
You mean a tip to where to start their journey, or?
Yeah, or just maybe some references or resources. Maybe if someone's, you've piqued their curiosity today, Laura, and they're going, where do I start? Where's maybe a resource, maybe a website or somewhere they can go to start to be curious?
Yeah, well, you've mentioned Jenny, because Jenny is the reason that you and I met. And Jenny Anderson. She has an organization called We Activate Our Future. I can't remember it, but you can Google her. But she's very active on Facebook and has started some brilliant communities there. One called Imaginal Selves that you can become part of to create this discussion and be a part of that. There is also, and she also has a lot of very interesting blog posts on Medium. Daniel Christian Val is very interesting as well, and is also running a few communities on Facebook where there's plenty of resources to dive into. Of course, my co-author Giles Hutchins has written a few other books that I would also recommend. So those are good starting points. And then on my website, Regenerators, there's also a list of references to other books, also on Giles and my shared website called regenerativeleadership.co. There's also a list of resources you can click on, and there comes a list of recommended books and resources and videos to dive into. So there's plenty to get inspired by and to start your journey slowly. And one thing that I would really like to say is that if any of what we have talked about today and your other interviews has intrigued your curiosity, there's of course plenty of podcast interviews, etc., you can start listening to, which is helpful. I did a podcast series, by the way, a few years ago called Cracks of Light, that is on my personal website, laura/storm.com, called Cracks of Light, that you could listen to. But what I just want to say is, referring back to what we've all already talked about, if I could only suggest one thing, it would be to create those spaces throughout your day, maybe 10 minutes time for morning, midday, afternoon, evening, where you just connect with yourself and just be with yourself. How am I feeling? How was my day? What felt good? What did not feel good? And first and foremost, be incredibly kind and compassionate towards yourself, because we are living in challenging times. And it can be easy once we start, kind of once the light bulb goes on and we become like, whoa, the life that I'm living in, or the life that I've designed for myself, is not making me feel happy. It's not making me feel healthy. I feel empty inside. Two things can happen. You can become incredibly depressed, not knowing what to do. Or you can shut off, because the realization that you've lived most of your life on a lie, in a way, is so depressing that you don't want to go down there. So you just keep on pretending everything is fine. So be incredibly kind to yourself on this journey, and take one step at a time, and knowing what I'm trying to say is that make this exciting, make this fun, and make this compassionate, and be thankful to yourself that you have started to realize that there may be another way of designing life on earth. There may be another way for you, and that it's, now I'm going to be very esoteric, the fact that you feel intrigued and curious is because there's something deeper inside you that is trying to communicate to you. So make those spaces to listen to what that is trying to tell you.
That's beautiful. What a lovely way to wrap up, Laura. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot.
Thank you.
I'm sure we would have learned a lot together. And I'd also like to add to that as well, I've learned only the last few months, in case it's helpful, that learning and sharing like this in community is really powerful and really helpful.
Yes, yes.
We don't need to do it on our own.
No. Exactly. And speaking of Jenny and community, she and I are actually launching a community where we are holding space for a longer period of time for people that have this desire and this longing. But instead of like an 8-week long online program that people forget about or don't really prioritize, we have designed it in a way where it really becomes part of everyday life slowly but surely, because we see again and again how many people are on this journey and are longing for people that are on a similar state of their life and miss new kind of peers and miss new kind of soulmates in a way that they can journey with and be together with in real time.
That's wonderful. Is that already started or is that something that's upcoming, Laura?
It's something we're creating now and we will launch in a few weeks.
Well, do give me the details. I'll make sure all your contact details are in the show notes. And if you'd just like to let those of us, as we depart today, what's the best way to find you? What's the best mediums, Laura?
I am actually quite active on Instagram. But other than that, I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook, and I have my personal website that you may include in the show notes, and then Regenerator's website.
Wonderful. I'll also make sure that the TEDx talk that you did recently before you gave birth to your second child is also on the in the show notes.
Yeah, and actually, if people are interested in the experience of surrendering that I did almost 5 years ago when I had my brain injury, I did a TEDx on that as well. So that's maybe something that is interesting to people, where I dive deep into what happened and how did I surrender to silence.
Wonderful. Well, I think we could all do a bit more of that, including me. So, Laura, until next time, thank you for your time. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much.
Hi, your podcast host, Gary, here, wrapping up another sensational conversation. It's the only word I can use. I really hope you took value away from this conversation. I took so, so much personally. To share a couple of my reflections in case they sit with you as well, was when Laura shared that I could not believe someone like me that had worked in sustainability my entire life did not know more about nature than I did. Understanding nature systems, understanding how nature works, how nature collaborates. Now, how often do you, the listener who's kindly joined us today, get out of your box office during the day? So often we're chained to our desks. We chain ourselves to our desk because we're in the mindset of busyness, stuck inside our thinking. Go out and have that walk. Go out and have that run. Just stop and get away from your screen for a bit of time today, more so intentionally than maybe you otherwise would. Also, Laura spoke about if we don't practice slowing down and operating by another speed, we will continue at this speed that we have falsely trained our body to be in nonstop. Basically, it's what we call the high beta mode. It's no wonder we're stressing ourselves out. It's no wonder I burnt myself out 5 years ago. We're overthinking our way and overspeeding our way into early demise, basically. It sounds dramatic, but it's true. And we can see it with the mental health statistics. We see it with the suicide rates, etc. You know, we are actually doing a lot of this to ourselves because we are disconnected from ourselves. Connection, belonging, you know, this stuff is not a nice to have. It's absolutely critical. And I really loved how Laura spoke about start to explore with curiosity your inner emotional landscape. When we start doing that on a more regular basis, there's a whole new world that starts to unfold. And this speaks to exactly why this podcast exists, as a safe space to have the conversation around this inner emotional landscape. What does it feel and sound like to be more vulnerable? What does it feel and sound like to be more courageous? You know, how do we develop more of a growth mindset over being fixed and fear-based? You know, explore your inner emotional landscape. It can be scary. There's probably demons that you don't want to go near, but it's okay. None of those stories you're telling yourself are causal on your well-being. You are already good enough. We are all already of equal value and good enough. So hopeful, so direct, and just so necessary, this conversation. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love your challenges. I love your thoughts and reflections. And of course, we'd always appreciate reaching more people that you feel could benefit. So please feel free to share on social media or leave a review on the podcast app. But this is never going to be a million person podcast, and that's okay. That's not what it's about. It's about using this safe space for people to find themselves, find one another, and continue the humans first journey that we're all on back to connection, so that we can then serve and look after this world, this blue planet that we are all part of collectively. All the best. You can find me at Gary IP Catalyst on Twitter. You can find me, Gary Turner, Interpersonal Catalyst on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you. And my email is GaryTurner0, Gary with two R's, @hotmail.com. Till next time, have a wonderful day. Stay safe, stay hopeful, but also make a difference. Take care.
Really hoping that you enjoyed that exploration on the Value Through Vulnerability podcast. You can find out much more about Hexo Change at hexochangenow.com. That's HexoChangeNow, one word, .com. You can subscribe to a weekly newsletter at that website, which includes information about live stream conversations, further service offerings, blogs, but also our in-person events, of which we have multiple each year. So I really hope that you'll join us. Do connect with me, Gary Turner, on LinkedIn, and I really hope to hear from you soon.